folks get into this game, because I think it's a very interesting thing for all of them.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. It'll be interesting to see if they can kind of catch up with some of the big hitters there with their new features. Because it's kind of already kind of a crowded market, what with, you know, Apple and Dropbox already having their own stuff going strong.
Exactly. And you know, I think it's going to be good for more competitors to be in the market, and that'll be good for that. In another news article from Network World, a former Microsoft employee charged in March with leaking Windows Update software that validates product key codes was sentenced to a three-month prison term on Tuesday. Now, after he serves his sentence, Alex Kibkalo, age 34, will be deported to Russia. Kibkalo was arrested on March 19th in Bellevue, Washington, for allegedly leaking pre-release software updates for Windows RT, which is the tablet-specific operating system for Windows, to a French blogger in July and August of 2012, months before it released. Now, the FBI, which was brought into the case after Microsoft's investigation, also said Kibkalo provided the same blogger with the Activation Server SDK, or Software Development Kit, which is internal-only code to create the activation systems which validate product keys, and which is also Microsoft's primary anti-theft technology. So this guy is in some pretty big trouble. He stole some stuff that he shouldn't have stole, and looks like he's going to get in trouble and get deported.
Yeah, that's not good. It's there's so much security that has to be around these major companies with their software and stuff. It's a shame that you have to worry about people just throwing away all that hard work.
Exactly.
Next, we got some information coming from telecom field. Level 3 Communication is buying TW Telecom for approximately $5.7 billion in an effort to boost its metropolitan footprint of six networks. The two operators are highly complementary, according to Level 3. The combination of the two companies creates a stronger, more nimble competitor to their incumbents, it said on Monday. Level 3 said its own customers will benefit from TW Telecom's deep metropolitan footprint and buildings connected to the network, resulting in a faster and more reliable fixed broadband connection in the U.S. Meanwhile, TW Telecom's customers will be able to take advantage of Level 3's backbone networks and data centers in more than 60 countries, as well as global subsea networks, it said. The two companies have entered into a definitive agreement valued at $40.86 per share of TW Telecom common stock, or approximately $7.3 billion, including about $1.6 billion of net debt as of the end of March. Shareholders will receive $10 cash and 0.7 shares of Level 3 common stock for each share of TW Telecom that is owned at the closing.
So, you know, that's interesting buyout there. And, you know, I'm always up for more competition in the telecom region because, I mean, that's really what we need. We need more competition in telecom, and it doesn't look like that's what's going to happen here, unfortunately.
No. It seems like anymore all you ever hear about is consolidation of smaller companies into much larger ones, and like you said, thereby decreasing competition and making it harder on the consumers.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll see some more news about some more competition instead of less competition. That would be very nice.
Yes, it seems like we always get more of the former rather than the latter.
Now, this is, like I said, this is an unusual circumstance for our show, but since you're up in the Iowa area, what's it like up there as far as telecom and internet connectivity for you guys? I mean, down here, for instance, in Williamsburg, we have one or maybe two players, and there's some big differences in price range, depending on whether you've got, say, a Charter or a Access Cable here.
Uh-huh.
I was just talking to somebody today that their cable bill is a difference of maybe like $30 from mine, and they get almost twice as bandwidth that I do. Theirs is they pay less and get more bandwidth. So what about up there? Do you guys have access to lots of stuff?
Where I am, it's really bad, actually. I only have one provider of cable and internet service through them. And it's either that or doing over the telephone D-cell.
So that's all the options you have up there.
That is all I have, and it's very overpriced and very very slow.
Well, that's not good for anybody when things are overpriced and slow. So I mean, that's not a good thing for sure. And I mean, you know, competition, just like we were talking about earlier, that's really where things need to go. We need to have more competition in the telecom communications region so that the prices can go lower and the customers can be served better.
Yes, these companies are only going to be hurting themselves in the long run with all this, you know, price fixing and such. You know, someone's going to come along that's going to do it way better, and then they're going to just be left with nothing. So they need to get on the consumer side and start, you know, looking at what they're doing and make sure that they're on the side of the consumer.
Exactly. In a BGR article this week, Apple on Friday of last week announced a new program that invites millions of iPhone users across 37 different countries to swap out their iPhone chargers, which may be faulty. According to Apple's website, the company has determined that one of its iPhone charger models can potentially overheat and pose a safety risk. Apple says that overheating only occurs in rare cases, but it apparently decided to play it safe and offer users opportunity to swap effective chargers out for newer models. In my opinion, if it's one case, then that's enough. Of note, chargers that ship with newer iPhone models are not affected by this potential issue. And according to Apple, only models A1300 chargers that shipped with the iPhone 3GS, iPhone 4, and 4S pose a potential risk. It says here in a quote from Apple, Apple has voluntarily introduced a program for customers to exchange the Apple 5-watt European USB power adapter, which came with the iPhone 3GS, iPhone 4, iPhone 4S models through September 2012, because in rare cases, the adapter may overheat and pose a safety risk. More details on the exchange program can be found on Apple's website. And just for our listeners, this is for European adapters for the iPhone 3GS, 4, and 4S. So not the one you have plugged in at home in your standard 110 outlet. We're talking about the one that you might take overseas with you when you're on a trip.
Yes, this can be a bad problem. Unfortunately, with all these third-party chargers, I've actually seen some of these overheating units that just bubble the plastic, and it can be a potential fire. I think it's important to remind our users, you know, when you're not using these things, you probably want to unplug them.
Exactly. And I mean, you don't want to risk your house being burnt down or your apartment being burnt down by something that, you know, you could have prevented by just unplugging it.
Yes, that's true. From Microsoft, we have reports of that they've quietly stopped serving security updates to Internet Explorer 11, i.e. 11 on consumer and small business Windows 7 PCs, unless the customer has successfully applied an April update for the browser. The requirement and associated patch stoppage were similar to those Microsoft mandated for Windows 8.1 when it told customers that they had to migrate to Windows 8.1 update by June 10th or lose their patch privileges. The Windows 7 requirement, however, affected only IE 11, Microsoft's newest browser, not the operating system. Users who have not installed the IE security update issued on April 8th, identified by Microsoft as MS-14-018 on Windows 7, and who rely on Windows Update to download and Install 6s did not receive the June 10th IE update, nor will IE 11 receive any future updates, security or otherwise, until MS-14-018 has been installed. Windows Update will not display the appropriate IE 11 patches. So we've kind of got this situation where it's possible that you can be out of date and not really even know it.
Well, I mean, it's hard enough for end users to make sure they're up to date. And, you know, just throwing this out here for our listeners, I mean, you as an end user need to do a few things. I mean, number one, you need to make sure that you're on an operating system that's supported. So we've talked about this in previous episodes of the show, but if you're using an operating system that's Windows XP or previous, or if you're using, you know, Mac OS X, what's the latest, 10? The latest is Mavericks. If you're using anything before Mountain Lion, I mean, there's a lot of things there that aren't going to be protected. But especially in a Windows PC, since there's a lot of viruses written for that, I mean, if you're using Windows XP right now, your machine is not protected, and you either need to shell out the money to buy a new machine or upgrade the software on your machine. And to be honest with you, it's, in my opinion, Daniel, I'm not sure about your opinion, but I think it's almost better just to go get a new machine.
I agree. And prices are such now that it's almost more expensive to purchase the operating system than it is to just go out and buy a new PC.
Well, and they do that on purpose, you know, so that, you know, the software manufacturers and the hardware manufacturers are in together, so they do that on purpose so that, you know, you will go out and buy the new hardware. And, you know, it's good for them, too, because both of us have worked in tech support. We know that when a user has an old piece of software or a new piece of software they try to use on an old machine, you get a lot more tech support calls about that, and that's typically not a good thing. So, you know, the important thing about this...
And it really hurts them... experience with the software, so nobody wants that.
Exactly. Yeah, the software developer doesn't want that, and the customer doesn't want that either. So, you know, if you're using a PC and you have, you know, Windows 7, go out there and make sure you have all the latest updates. You know, go click on Start, click on Control Panel, go to the Windows Updates, and make sure you have all the latest updates on your PC, because that's extremely important, and that makes sure that you get this patch.
Yeah.
Definitely. Another BGR article, this one talking about security. Now, following the Target, Neiman Marcus, and Michael Stores, all major retailers which have been targeted by hackers in past months, restaurant chain P.F. Chang's China Bistro on Thursday confirmed that its payment system has been breached, with credit and debit card data from some of its locations having been exposed. Several banks told this publication that we got this article from, that the hack may have taken place for multiple weeks, from March 2014 to May 19th of this year. Now, card data has been stolen from the PFC locations in Florida, Maryland, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Nevada, and North Carolina, and Iowa. No, just kidding, Daniel. Although PFC is yet to confirm these revelations. Meanwhile, the restaurant chain wants to reassure its customers that it's taken payment security very seriously. So here's what they've done. Quote, they said they will move to a, quote, manual credit card imprinting system, end quote, for all of its locations in the U.S., which will allow users to keep paying with debit and credit cards at PFC. So they've decided to go back to the old days, like when we were younger, Daniel, and, you know, you put the card down, and they have that little the paper, the imprint paper behind it, and they swipe it across through there, and then they keep the paper records.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, maybe that's a good idea short term, but it looks to me like that would be just as bad to have those laying around too. So I mean, you know, fix the problem, right?
Well, I think I love me some P.F. Chang's, so they've added these new features, especially for their to-go thing, where they'll let you order online. And so I'm imagining most of this has come from this. And so, I mean, I guess my biggest thing to tell, you know, your listeners is that never store your credit card information anywhere.
Exactly.
They'll always ask you for it. Just don't do it. I mean, sure, it's convenient that next time you don't have to type it in, but it's not worth the risk. Now you're going to have to go and cancel that credit card and get a new one and reactivate it. You're going to have to take all this time. You could have just saved yourself by not saying that you wanted them to save that information.
And especially, I mean, it's bad enough. You shouldn't even do it on your own PC, but especially if you're at a public location. I mean, don't even input your credit card number at a public location. And, you know, you always need to remember to clear your cache and your browser after you've paid with a credit card, and just some simple security things to keep yourself safe. So, you know, this is big stuff. I mean, and who knows, we may find out the same thing about PF Chang's that we found out about Target. It wasn't Target's fault.
Yeah.
But it was Target's fault. So what I mean by that is, you know, there was a third-party company that lost all of Target's data, credit card data. But who's at fault for that? Target's at fault for that because they're the ones that's supposed to keep track of their third-party vendors. And the same thing may have happened with PF Chang's, and I didn't know that about the online ordering. So, I mean, it sounds to me like that was probably the culprit, Daniel.
Yep. Well, moving on, we have... talked about Comcast, and as a previous Comcast customer, I didn't like to hear this, but apparently they had a big idea where they were going to try to create the biggest Wi-Fi network in the country by transforming residential Xfinity gateways into public Wi-Fi access points. Now, I guess may sound good to them, but if you're a customer and you've got all these other people logging on to your device, I guess it seems like there would be some potential for bandwidth loss. They say that the Comcast officials, that is, say that people using the internet via the hotspot won't slow down internet access on the home network, and that they'll be giving additional capacity to handle that bandwidth, but I guess from what it sounded like in the article, this was being tested in Houston. So I don't like this at all. I mean, I would not want somebody connecting to my gateway. Period. Kind of irks me.
I agree 100%. I mean, what they're trying to do is they're trying to create a mesh network out of all their access points. And for our listeners, essentially, when you get internet access from, say, your cable company or your DSL company, it's a cable company, for instance, and they bring you that all-in-one box that you just plug into the wall, and magically you have wireless and you have internet and the whole nine yards. Well, what this article is saying is that Comcast is taking those boxes and configuring them without your knowledge to allow other users to connect into your Wi-Fi box and into your router and use your bandwidth. But they're saying that they're going to supplement you with extra bandwidth. But then what happens is once somebody connects to that, just like Daniel said, once they connect to your gateway, they have access to your internal network. And Comcast says that that's not the case, but people can hack anything.
Yeah, the point is once you're connected, I mean, they can explore any security loophole on that router.
And then, you know, so. Right, and any information that you have on the inside of your home network that you believe to be secure, which we know from our past discussions of security that nothing is ever secure, but it's no longer secure at all.
Yep.
So, yeah I agree like with you. Yeah, I agree with you. I don't like that.
There were some comments in there about, you know, like, okay, what if law enforcement, you know, uses that IP address to track some illegal activity, you know? If they're going to come knocking on your door, you know, and it's your neighbor that's escaping out the window, you know?
Exactly. Or the guy who did war driving down the road.
Yeah.
And war driving just means they drove by your house and picked up your internet, your Wi-Fi signal, and then drove off after that. That's what war driving means, not that they blew your house up with a tank. So, yeah, I don't like this either. I don't like it either.
Yeah, well, I guess we need to, like this show, hopefully other people will get the word out and, you know, they'll scrap these very stupid plans, in my opinion.
I agree 100%. Another BGR article about Google Fiber says that Portland, Oregon might be about to get fiber network that's very 21st century. The Oregonian, I guess that's the way you pronounce that, reports that the Portland City Council has voted unanimously to approve Google's fiber franchise agreement with the city, which paves the way for Google's high-speed fiber network to set up shop in the Northwest for the first time. Now, none of this guarantees that Google Fiber will land in Portland, but it's definitely something that Google will see as a big plus as it decides on where to bring fiber next. I'm voting for Williamsburg, Kentucky. And Google still needs to get licenses to use Portland's utility poles and permits to put utility cabinets in the public right-of-way, so this is far from a done deal, even though approving the franchise agreement was a huge step in the right direction. Google announced earlier this year that it's looking into bringing Google Fiber to up to 9 new markets, which are Atlanta, Charlotte, Nashville, Phoenix, Portland, Raleigh-Durham, San Antonio, Salt Lake City, and San Jose. Sorry, listeners, nothing in the Tri-County was on there. Not London, not Corbin, not Williamsburg. Sorry, Daniel, Des Moines not in there either.
Yeah, I didn't see it in there either. Darn.
So I mean, Google Fiber. I mean, that's I would like to be able to hook onto that.
Oh yeah. What is it? 100 gigabit.
Oh yeah. Backbone? Oh yeah. Yeah. So I mean, that's really, if we want to expand bandwidth, I mean, that's where it needs to go.
Yep. That's, I can't even imagine those kinds of speeds. That would be awesome.
It would.
Moving on, we have SanDisk looking to shore up its position in the enterprise flash storage market by purchasing Fusion.io for U.S. $1.1 billion in an all-cash deal. The acquisition was announced Monday. It's expected to close in the third quarter. Fusion.io will accelerate our efforts to enable the flash transform data center, helping companies better manage increasingly heavy data workloads at a lower total cost of ownership, said their CEO, Sanjay. I hope I say this right, but Mehrotra.
That was pretty good.
In a statement. Their chief scientist is Apple's co-founder, Steve Wozniak. Since undergoing a high-profile IPO in 2011, the company has had mixed financial performance, in part due to a reported over-reliance on a number of large customers, including Apple and Facebook. So,
I did not know the Woz was working for them.
Yeah, I did not realize that either. I thought that was interesting.
So now we know what the Woz is doing.
Yep. I guess this is good. It'll help. SanDisk will definitely help give them the capital that they need to help take these data centers technologically forward. But so I guess those flash drives that they're putting in computers nowadays are going to be going into these data centers that are being used by Apple and Facebook. So I'm guessing what's happening is that Apple and Facebook are kind of cutting them out of the loop and doing their own thing now.
It looks that way. And, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, these small companies like this need some big company to gobble them up so that they have the capital that they need to continue their projects. And you know, that's most of these entrepreneurs who go out and start these companies, that's the end game for them. That's really what they're looking for. They're looking to start a product, and you see all these Kickstarters out there. I saw one the other day. It was for a and I meant to look back at it and see how far along they were, but it was for a credit card that kept all your credit cards. It was like a digital wallet card. And that's what these Kickstarters are doing. They're trying to find something cool and innovative and then eventually get bought out by somebody and make a lot of money. And so it looks like Fusion.io has done that.
Yeah, they definitely got their payday.
Payday someday. All right. And we're going to talk a little bit more about this, I think, in our deep dive. But last article for our tech roundup, PC Mag article says that the U.S. government is gearing up to auction more than $17 million worth of bitcoins it seized last year after the takedown of the Silk Road online black market. Now, if you don't know what a bitcoin is, stick around. We're going to talk about that in our deep dive. This is a quote from the U.S. Marshal's Office. The auction is for the bitcoins contained in the wallet files that resided on Silk Road servers. The lot includes 29,656.5130652 bitcoins. And the reason that there's all those decimal points is because the bitcoin is so much more, it's worth more than the dollar. So you have to take it out many decimal points, and that's why it's valued at $17.3 million. So 29,500 bitcoins, $17 million. That's kind of the
crazy
exchange rate there. We'll talk a little bit more about that here in a little bit. Exchange rate as of today, I was going to mention this later, but exchange rate as of today, one bitcoin equals $605 US, and that's up 1.3% today, actually. Now, the sale is going to take place on June 27th from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, during which nine blocks of 3,000 bitcoins and one block of 2,656 bitcoins will be sold to the highest bidder. The people who are interested in digital currency can place bids on the U.S. Marshals website, and winners will be notified on June 30th. Now, Daniel, I know you got a lot of money. You're going to be buying one of those, right?
Yeah, I wish.
What would that be?
I wish I'd have bought them, when they were, like $40 exchange rate. I'd be sitting pretty.
Yeah, that would have been back towards the end of 2012, start of 2013. Yep. Yeah, I mean, just imagine you would have a good bit of money at this point. The bad thing about I'm not going to talk more about Bitcoin because we're going to talk about that in our deep dive, and I don't want to give up too much. So that concludes our tech roundup for today. We're going to move on now to App of the Week. So our app of the week for this week is an app called CloudOn. Daniel, have you ever used CloudOn?
I have not used CloudOn, but it looks like a very interesting product.
I've got CloudOn on both of my iOS devices, my phone and my my iPad. And according to their website, CloudOn users have logged over 8 million productivity hours to create, review, edit, present, or share over 80 million documents, spreadsheets, and presentations. Now, they can be found at www.cloudon.com. Now, what I use it for is, well, let's talk about what it is first. It provides a Microsoft Office-type platform, Word, Excel, to you on an iOS device or an Android device. So let's say, for instance, you're out getting ready to go to a meeting and you think, oh, man, I need to make a change to that document real quick. And let's say you may not have pages or pages may not format something correctly in your document. You need to open it up in Word. And you don't have access to Office 365, so you fire up CloudOn, which is free, and it'll connect to, I know it connects to Dropbox, and I think it connects to a few other cloud storage services as well. And you pull up that document, you edit that document right there in a Microsoft Word interface, and you save it back out. It is pretty cool, and I've used it in a crunch a few times when I needed to make a change to a document and I didn't have any other access to anything else to make the change. And so
that sounds pretty cool, Justin. That's one of the most frustrating parts of there, and there's not many. I must say I love my iOS products, but the integration with some of Microsoft's word processing and spreadsheet software is not very good. It sounds like this might be a good bridge for that.
Well, I think so, and like I said, it's one of those things that gets you out of a crunch when you really need to get out of that crunch, and It's helped me on several occasions. And just so our listeners know, we're not paid by CloudOn to talk about this. We just pick an app once a week and something that I use or Kurt uses. And since he wasn't able to be here tonight, I picked it. And this is something that is really good for me. So take a look when you get a chance, www.cloudon.com. And you can also search for CloudOn on the Google Play Store or the Apple Store and download that for free. Hook it up to your Dropbox account and check it out. See if it's something that'll help you. And if it is, it doesn't hurt to try it out. It's free. So what we want to do now is transition into our deep dive, and we're going to talk a lot about some things here in our deep dive tonight. All right, so one of the first things we want to talk about in our deep dive tonight is coming from a Network World article, but there's, as you know, there's lots of articles out there about our deep dives. And this has to do with patents. Now, in an extraordinary move, the famous electric car maker Tesla Motors did the unthinkable, or at least unthinkable to most companies. It has announced that the company will no longer defend its patents. And in so doing, it has effectively converted its very valuable intellectual property into open source. Now, the June 12th announcement by Tesla's founder, Elon Musk, on the Tesla blog titled, All Our Patent Are Belong to You. That's what he titled it. The article began, quote, "Yesterday there was a wall of Tesla patents in the lobby of our Palo Alto headquarters. That is no longer the case. They have been removed in the spirit of the open source movement for the advancement of electric vehicle technology." So, Daniel, what's your thoughts on this? I mean, you know, patents are a huge thing. They are, I mean, we've talked about it on this show before, and there's been lots of news about it in the past. I'm sure we'll talk about it in the future. And patent wars. I mean, there's you know, Apple and Samsung, and there's, you know, Microsoft sues Apple, and Apple sues Microsoft, and it's essentially today's game. Today's game in the technology corporate world is you have all these patents, and if anybody else even remotely thinks about making something that is anything remotely like your patent, you sue their pants off, and you get money because you have that patent on it. And Tesla says we're done with that.
Well, I have a couple thoughts on this. One, I really personally admire Tesla's founder, Elon Musk. The things that he's managed to accomplish in his life are just amazing. And I think this is kind of cool. I don't like what you just described, all these patent wars and, you know, suing over, you know, the shape of buttons, you know, and iOS devices, you know, things like that. It's just, I think it's a little ridiculous. That being said, I think this is probably a smart move for them, and I think that's evidenced by the fact that their stock prices still continue to go up even after this announcement. And that Tesla can't do it all. You know, they can't put in all the infrastructure to make their founder's dream a reality, you know, of electric cars everywhere. They need help. You know, they need somebody to come along, and they said they're going to try to do it, but they need, you know, other people also, you know, coming in with new technology and to make it easier for everybody to afford an electric vehicle. And so I think this is a good thing. I think it'll help them, and I think it'll help the consumer as well.
Well, and you made a good point about their stock price. I just took a look at it here. It's at $231.67 a share. It went up by 7 points today, which is about 3.8%. So I mean, you're right. And if you look at their stock prices over the last over the day it went up, but if you look at their stock prices over the last month, it's continued to go up as well, and it, like I said, it shot up exponentially because of them wanting to go with a non-patent fighting platform.
Yep,
And so
go ahead. Kudos to them. I think it's great.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, you hit the nail on the head because, you know, how are we going to get more electric cars? Are we going to get more electric cars by one person or one company hanging on to all of the electric car patents? I mean, is that how we research and diversify the electric car or electric, you know, vehicle business? No.
No.
It's not. I mean, you diversify by collaboration, and that's what Tesla's going to do. I mean, they're handing out these patents, and they're saying, okay, you smart people out there, collaborate. I mean, it's kind of like NASA. I mean, that's what NASA needs to do, and we've seen some of that with them sending some of their stuff to the private sector. But if they want to go further into space, if they want to go back to the moon again, if they want to do more with the International Space Station, and dare I even say if they want to go to Mars, they're going to need to give this to smart people out there in the community and let them have their crack at it.
Yep. I just like I said, I have nothing but good things to say about Elon Musk, and it's really in spirit with what the ideas that he's espoused about creating a greater, you know, world to live in for everybody.
So, question: do you think there's any way? I mean, there's I'm sure there's some way in some alternate universe, but is there any way for this to kick back on Tesla and hurt them financially and hurt their company overall?
Now, I hadn't dig too deeply into it, but I'm not sure if all their patents, they're not going to be defending any of their patents. I know that most of the speculation regarding their stock price doesn't really have anything to do with them as a car maker. It mostly has to do with a lot of the stuff that they've been doing in regards to battery technology. They've talked about opening up a couple super factories for the next generation of batteries and the lithium ion technology, but I guess that would be something interesting to see. You know, if somebody else can come in and use these patents, you know, and basically undercut them severely, then, you know, it could happen. But I'm kind of thinking that I don't think Elon Musk really cares as long as the technology gets out there and gets, you know, he wants it to be in every home, you know?
Well,
I think he either way, he wins.
I hope one of these days when I am laying, relaxing in my car and it's driving me to work with an electric motor that I'll thank Elon Musk for what he did.
Yep, definitely.
Now, one other article we found about electric cars, and just for Daniel's sake, I'm going to skip down a little bit here in our paper for today, but a CNET article talked about, you know, electric buses, and this kind of goes along with what we've been talking about. So electric buses are coveted for quietly keeping emissions out of the air. Many of these big vehicles hook into an overhead power line to keep them running. So you see those movies, you know, like in San Francisco, like they've done for years, of the trolleys with the line hooked up there. But those lines run slightly and can require a lot of infrastructure work to install. Now, you can get rid of overhead power lines by running buses solely on batteries, but it's a challenge to keep those batteries charged for long days of operation. And that's what Daniel was just talking about. That's one of the things that Tesla's been working on, is battery innovations. But in Geneva, Switzerland, the TOSA, or Trolleybus Optimization System, Alimentation, I guess that's a word that they use over there, pilot project is testing electric buses with an unusual method for keeping charging. The articulated bus has a battery pack on top. So typically they're on the bottom. This one has one on top. And when it pulls into certain stations, it connects through a robotic arm to what is essentially an electric bus dock. A 15-second rapid flash charge helps keep the buses running all day. Now, each bus can hold 133 passengers, and the fast charge is enough to get the bus to the next charging station, which is usually located every few stops. So the goal of this TOSA project is to determine the most efficient and a cost-effective way to implement electric buses and mass transportation systems. It was built by ABB, a Zurich-based corporation known for developing robotics and power and automation technologies in partnership with the École Polytechnique Fédérale de Louisiane, nice French word there, a Swiss technology institute. So, you know, along the same lines of electric cars, you know, here's the question. What's the big deal about electric cars, and are they going to catch on, Daniel?
That's kind of the question everybody's asking. The first thing that really needs to happen, and, you know, Tesla started this, is, you know, the infrastructure has to be in place, and the charging times have got to come down. Tesla's taking a crack at it. They're creating a nationwide network of fast charging stations, but, I mean, you're still looking at, you know, we're not talking about, you know, your 5-minute fill up, you know, with gasoline, you know. So in order for these things to happen, you know, we've got to see those two things. You know, capacity has to go up, the infrastructure has to be in place for, you know, these fast charging the times need to come down. And then I think you'll start seeing, you know, more mainstream users latching on to this idea of battery-powered cars. But, I mean, I think it's good. I mean, the technology is improving. It's improving all the time. Now, lithium-ion batteries are expensive.
Yes.
And the problem is the materials that they're made out of are not getting any cheaper. In fact, in some cases, they're getting more expensive, just because they're very rare. And actually, I've seen where there's worries that those supplies may run dry. So, you know, if we don't look, find new sources.
Yeah, and you know, you're right. I mean, the whole point is that this is going to have to become more popular to the point that it's affordable and it's safe, and, you know, it makes sense to purchase that bus or that car instead of the other bus or the other car that's cheaper and runs on gasoline. And yep. maybe it's going to get to the point where gasoline prices have to get so high, like they're supposed to this summer, that people start thinking about that. And it's already happened with hybrid cars. So, I mean, you know, who says it can't happen with electric cars? So it'd be interesting to see, you know, where that goes. And it was interesting to have those two articles in the deep dive today. Now, we said we were going to talk about Bitcoin. So we found a couple of CNET articles talking about Bitcoin. Silicon Valley security firm BitGo is working with new ways to beef up Bitcoin safety and protect digital currency from cyber thieves and hackers. And investors appear to be showing their confidence in the company. BitGo announced Monday that it received $12 million in Series A financing. The CEO and co-founder Will O'Brien said in a statement, quote, "We are still in the early innings of the Bitcoin revolution. BitGo's mission is to secure the world's Bitcoin. By solving Bitcoin's early security concerns for our customers and industry partners, BitGo is excited to help the Bitcoin industry grow with what we believe will be a speed and scale comparable to the internet itself," end quote. So, Bitcoin is a online form of currency. It is not very secure at this point. Bitcoin its value went way up in earlier this year, like in January, and then in the, what was it, February or March time frame, Bitcoin got hacked and there was a bunch of malicious Bitcoin stealing, and the Bitcoin value went down again. And that was about around the time that everybody was talking about investing in Bitcoin. And and so a lot of people lost a lot of money because they invested in Bitcoin, and then the next day their Bitcoin value almost dropped in half. So, you know, question number one, is Bitcoin going to catch on outside the tech community, Daniel? What's your thoughts?
Well, I mean, it's right now it is, you know, only in the tech community. it's like it's the same problem that you have with all these companies trying to come out with the digital wallet. You know, it has to be easily usable by the consumer. You know, if your grocery store down the street doesn't take Bitcoin, you know, why are you going to use it other than, you know, like you said, maybe to buy it as an investment, which doesn't seem like a very safe investment at this point. It's a very volatile investment right now, and I'd be scared to touch it. So, you know, you've got to have retailers using it, and right now that's not really the case.
Well, and, you know, the security risk of Bitcoin is really the problem. I mean, you know, like you said, are companies going to start endorsing Bitcoin and using it in their online presence? Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, it is insecure. I mean, at this point, there's not enough security out there for people. You're right. I mean, investing in it, just like we said, I mean, if you go out and you look at the Bitcoin currency over, and you take a look at it over the last, you know, say 12 months or whatever, you'll mm-hmm. see that in January, I mean, it, you know, it was real high, and then all of a sudden it just dropped off because, like we said, there was people out there stealing Bitcoins.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know.
Well, and I just happened to read today, there was an article about a company known as GHash. And it's a mining pool, and what they've done is they're asking, you know, people to pool mining resources for Bitcoin. And I don't know how much you've exposed your users to the behind the scenes, you know, parts of Bitcoin and mining. But basically, the Bitcoin's predicated on the fact that there's no centralized control of the currency, and so you have, you know, all these people, you know, dedicating people independent resources to do the calculations necessary to maintain this decentralized banking system. And GHash has been pooling resources to the point where I heard they've recently gone over 50% of all, you know, Bitcoin mining. So when that happens, you don't have decentralization. You have centralization, and then you've destroyed the whole point of Bitcoin, and it's no longer this unhackable, decentralized, you know, system. That's just another wrinkle in the path to Bitcoin supremacy.
Yeah,
I guess you could say.
And it's got to change if it's going to be a supreme currency, and you know it's got to get some backing as well from federal governments and things like that as well if it's going to be used as a true currency.
Yeah, well, I mean, like going back to getting retailers on board, you know, nobody's going to pay the money to install, you know,
something that will read the Bitcoin.
Wallet. Yeah,
yeah.
Get the Bitcoin, the wallets, you know, whatever they need to do to, you know, take Bitcoin as a currency at their institution. They're not gonna put that money up front when, you know, the government hasn't endorsed it as a currency. We don't even know if it's going to be legal in a year to trade in Bitcoin.
Right.
You know,
so
there's just no rules yet.
Right, so why waste the time? Why use the resources to do that?
Yes, exactly. And until the government does step in and make some rules and kind of legitimize this currency, you're not going to see the retailer involvement, and then consequently, you're not going to see the consumer involvement to the place where this thing really could take over.
Exactly. Well, that is all for the Bitcoin, and I think just something interesting that we want to talk about just for a minute or two about sports tech. A CNET article said that all things are meant to be infallible, new technology being used in the 2014 World Cup has caused a stir, and some of our listeners who are World Cup soccer fans may have known about this already, but the World Cup was relieved that FIFA, the often retrograde organizing body behind the World Cups, staggered into the 20th century and decided to use goal line technology to automatically detect when a ball crosses the goal line. In many World Cups past, balls that clearly crossed the line weren't given as goals because the referee or his assistants couldn't be sure, or the article says, or just weren't looking. However, in Sunday's match between France and Honduras, there was a new sound in the World Cup stadium, fans booing the technology. So here's what happened. France already had a lead of 1-0. They were on the attack. The ball came through the Real World Madrid star Karim Benzema. His shot struck a post, and as the ball bounced across the face of the goal, still in the field of play, it hit Honduras goalkeeper Noel Valadares and headed into the goal. Now, Valadares frantically leaned back to scoop it out before it crossed the line. However, the goal control technology signaled to the referee that it was a goal, doubling France's lead. Now, Daniel, are you a soccer fan?
A little bit.
Okay.
Definitely more so during World Cup.
Yeah. Did you see this?
I seen the replays.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I'm not so much into soccer, but are we beginning to use too much technology in sports, and should we just leave it up to the referee and be done with it?
I have a hard time. I kind of fall on both sides of the fence on this one. I think I would like to see, when technology is implemented, I would like to see it as transparent as possible. I think one of the things was about this deal is that, you know, they put it up on the billboard, you know, that this was the technology's call, you know. But why do that? Why not just, you know, the referees are getting the information, you know, via their watch, I think is what they said. Why not just, you know, make it completely transparent and, you know, let the technology, you know, assist them and let them make the call and nobody really know that it's the technology. I guess that's my thing, is I'd like to see the technology be transparent to the experience.
Well, yeah, and I agree with that, and that's what's going to have to happen. I mean, to have, you know, I don't know. It's kind of like in baseball. The fans haven't liked it there either, so.
Yeah, I well, see, that's where, one case where, you know, it just, baseball's already so slow, and you're just completely disrupting the whole, you know, the whole game, you know, while you examine, you know, replays or whatever, you know, it's just it doesn't help. It makes the experience not so good. I kind of enjoy, you know, the day after a close game, you know, the back and forth, you know, between, oh, it's the referee's fault, you know, and he missed the call, you know. I mean, that's part of the game, you know.
You're right. It is. And I mean,
and if you take that away, I mean, it's, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's it for our deep dive today, and what we want to do real quick is take a look at the tech in numbers. So today the technology infrastructure closed at 0.3% high today, and our winner for the day was Microsystems. I've actually worked with some of their systems before, and they had a little over or almost a 9-point change today and 14% change. They're a global designer, manufacturer, and marketer of servicer of enterprise information solutions for global hospitality and retail industries. Now, our loser for today was Siffy Tech. They're out of India. They have integrated internet network and electronic commerce services companies there. And they enable businesses and consumers to communicate, transmit, and share information, online content, and conduct business remotely. They were down almost 6% today. And that is the tech in numbers. Daniel, I want to thank you a whole lot for being on the show today, my friend.
You're welcome, sir.
And all the way from Des Moines, Iowa, over the phone today. And I really appreciate you being on, and hope that you can come back and be a guest with us again soon.
Sure, anytime.
All right. Well, Daniel, you have yourself a good night, and I'm going to go ahead and get us signed off here. We do appreciate you listening to Tech Talk today on WCCR 94.5 LPFM. And don't forget to Check out our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/WCCRTechTalk. You can also find us on Twitter at WCCRTechTalk, or you can send us an email, WCCRTechTalk@gmail.com. And don't forget to look for today's podcast either on the Facebook page or on iTunes by searching for Tech Talk Today. And don't forget, next week will be episode 5. We'll have with us, hopefully, guest Eddie Wilson. He is the founder and director of Christian Ministries International. And it's going to be really exciting to talk with him about what's going on in his ministry and also for him to look at some tech news of the week with us. And so now I'm going to sign you off with some music for the day. And again, we appreciate you listening to our show. Don't forget, here in a few minutes, Figure 4 Fallout with Russell Ridenour, Bo Kidd, Casey Malone, Dustin Harden, and Justin Durbin coming right on after this.